I'm Jim Rugg.
My name's Ed Piskor.
And today we're going to look at Bill Sienkiewicz's artist edition, Mutants and Moon Knights and Assassins.
Very stoked, Ben. I have not looked through this ever. And off the bat, I know this cover well. Demon Bear Saga, New Mutants. Hoping that it's at least very close to size. Seeing the kind of the brushstrokes, the technique, it really gets tightened up when it gets shrunk down. And I would never have thought that it was this kind of like all over the place.
Yeah. Whenever when they start doing artist editions, Sienkiewicz was one that I was high on my list of hopeful. So I think this came out last year or something, and it's really great. We'll get into all of that, but pointing out this cover, Ed, you know, those brush strokes, that size difference, to me, that's part of why I wanted a Bill Sienkiewicz one, is to see some of these illustration techniques that he brings to comics.
Do you think this is like a black velvet, like painted onto a black...
No, I don't think so. I think that there's probably some splatter, you know, like if you look, there's certain like splatter effects, but I'm guessing, again, it's illustrative, and he's probably underpainting some things, which is my guess for like some of the color that you see here.
Right.
And then, you know, like almost creating that background and then drawing on top of it. Because if you look, this color that's in the background appears to be similar to what we're seeing as it gets into the figure. So I'm guessing that's it. And it's not uncommon in a painting to do that, to build up sort of in these layers and to have like a some kind of a base undercoat. So I'm guessing that's what that is. And the splatter could be from airbrushing, and it could even be from, like, I've seen airbrushing with markers, where like you really are like spraying out this almost physical tactile piece. And then I was looking at the white elements in this, and that looks like a color pencil or a chalk or something.
Yeah, Conte. So like maybe he like airbrushed that top part to get it that... It's a very uniform, dark gradient, and then just busting on top of it, man, with crayons or whatever.
With everything, because once you get into, like, there's some ink line, a lot of materials we're going to see, a lot of media on display in his work, but so excited. So let's get into it, man.
Real good end papers.
That's amazing. I'd love to know how many times that is blown up.
Yeah.
It's so great to see it at that size, though. And it gives me ideas on my own drawing where, like, try blowing up some stuff. You know, the cover for Aphrodisiac is blown up. Like, the original drawing is 2 inches or something. So, pretty great. But you do see him working with white on top of the black ink. Something that, you know, pay attention as you get into the pages, because he does this stuff on a very small scale and really, really things that you don't see a lot. This is another example of the extreme blow-up from the Daredevil, that Kingpin Love and Death graphic novel.
Love and War.
Love and War graphic novel. And very quickly, special thanks. There's a bunch of names in here. The name that I don't see is Kevin Eastman. And we had read that Kevin Eastman bought all of the Elektra Assassin artwork. And there's a lot of Elektra Assassin art in this book. So for that name not to be listed here, I don't know if he has sold it since, you know, since whenever we read an interview with him saying that in the 90s. Which obviously possible, but
it's also possible he wanted everybody to forget that he's the owner of that stuff and was like, "You don't gotta put my name. It's all good."
Yeah, could be either.
I don't have that Words and Pictures Museum. I don't want people coming to the house looking for that stuff, because you gotta imagine those pages are worth a pretty penny.
I think so. This is remarkable because if you see it in the book, it's so tiny.
Duotone.
Up close and personal duotone.
Yeah, man.
How about that? This is good for... We've talked about duotone so much on the show, and you can see kind of like the lines are visible, but not really until you put that solution on top of them to pull them out. But blown up at this size, you can see that.
Yeah.
The line showing.
And you notice what you're seeing is the lower value. So there's like another set of lines that gets pulled out when you choose the dark developer.
Right.
And the light developer is like really corroded and because it's not archival.
Not at all. You can see it so much, like where the solution is, and the dark parts have kind of faded away from it.
And we own pages. You know, Joe Vigil dog pages, when you flip it on the back, you just see things eating through the fucking paper.
Very, very, very true.
Good sample.
Yeah, that shows you what we have to work with here.
Good sample, man. Let's do this.
I always think this New Mutants work has to be revolutionary whenever it's coming out. Like this is the indicia on this title page is 1984. This is issue 18. I think that's his first issue on New Mutants. So this just seems remarkable to me now. 1984, this had to be mind-blowing. And one thing that I've learned is I think it was very mixed how it was received. Like now I think we look back and go, oh yeah, he's this master and bring an illustration in. I think at the time there was a contingency of fans that were like, no, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we are cartoonists and we're into that. Like the average fan too probably isn't that into, you know, why are you, do you use all those messy lines and, you know,
yeah, for
shit
sure.
like that?
Yeah, I get that now. Love the line work.
Perfect page.
Very unusual approach here to like a big illustration, and again see him drawing with white media a lot.
The way that Chris Claremont described working with Sienkiewicz on this stuff and throughout any of their collaborations, he said what he liked about Sienkiewicz is that Bill draws subtext. So you never seen anything like this in any X-Men comic. Chris Claremont said whatever he said in his Marvel Method script, and then Bill's interpretation is this.
I think that too. Remember that again, Ed, when we get into Elektra Assassin, because I had that same reaction of like, man, the script had to look different than what came back. I also like how these pages are so weathered and yellowed, and you know, you see that age and that patina really makes for a nice artist edition. It feels like you're really seeing levels of work on these.
Just the total, like, you know, disrespect from the printer of the artwork man chopping stuff up.
Surprised by all that. Amazing drawing.
I don't want to get into the frame too much, but is that a paste up or is that a pencil I'm seeing on Cannonball's nose there?
I think it may be white out.
Okay.
I think they're correcting that silhouette a little bit with white out, but and we will see paste up.
And is this all paste up?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly why that's a different yellow.
There it is, man, the demon bear.
Hitchcock. Alfred Hitchcock?
Definitely.
So weird.
No doubt.
I always think, like, some of this stuff, it looks so much like photocopy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, high contrast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if he's looking at, I bet it's stuff that he's looking at, art books, black and white photo reproduction and one color printing and stuff.
Yeah.
And then incredible.
Yeah, what's cool about this, man, is the Zipitone screen, like the page, is probably this. So he used almost like the whole screen. And in fact, the page might be even this wide of like a sheet of Zipitone. So it's like he had to like factor that into the composition.
It's incredible the scale that he's getting here, where like it's the drawing is bleeding off literally every side. And then I love all of the landscape because like it's neat on either side, but then inside you get like that reverse, the negative of like the sunset kind of on that same desert southwest landscape. It's a beautiful drawing. And then this part, I was impressed when I saw these. It's all on the artwork. You know, like, this title is pasted up, so he must have tried that a couple of times or whatever. Looks great, finally. But this stuff is all just drawn right on there. So, Tom Morzakowski lettering, but not lettering this piece.
Yeah.
And I love this kind of stuff.
The height of his, like, discovery of, like, Ralph Steadman.
Yeah, totally. The Badlands is Steadman could have lettered that.
Yeah.
Scale, though, is amazing. And then, like, this kind of line work, a little bit abstract, very open for your sky and clouds. Incredible, along with the hatching for the landscape.
Yeah, as a composition, it's like, boom, you could put this on a wall. Your eyes go in there.
Yes. Little shades of Warlock. We're going to see some amazing Warlock in this.
That's awesome.
Incredible abstract teeth. I also think about this stuff in terms of you're doing this monthly. He did, I think, I don't know, 12 or 14 issues or so, 16 maybe, in this run. And it's like the scale of it, you know, it's mostly headshots and faces. You know, it's not, there's not too much heavy lifting in terms of like, oh, reference or rule out perspective. And I think, you know, you have to do that to make it work. But I don't feel shortchanged in any way.
I agree. And he's still shedding the Neil Adams influence a little bit in these pages. He's doing that far out abstract stuff, but he's still posing people and abiding by the light source in an accurate way. I mean, that's clearly posed.
These big splash pages are just incredible. Levels and levels of richness.
Yeah, Yeah, so much energy. Doing some discovery himself. Oh, she's better with lighter hair.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, redrawing, painting out hair, painting out teeth.
Interesting also how the whiteout is more archival than the paper that was pasted up.
That probably comes and goes depending on the year and date and bottle of whiteout.
Yeah.
I wouldn't count on whiteout at home.
Yeah, not whiteout. Yeah, the opaque white that he used.
Yeah, that's probably true too. Like, he's probably using paints or something. Like, I use acrylic white paint a lot for corrections. I just think the medium works better, so that's probably what we're seeing on some of those pages. And again, starting to see these bits of Warlock. And looking at Warlock, the way he draws Warlock, it reminds me almost of, like, Kirby Tech. Not the same style, but this, like, abstract visual shorthand that these artists had for certain things. And that's what I kind of see there, where it's like, that's not Tech, but we read it that way.
Yeah.
And it works great. You know, it's different than everything else.
This is fun, because he's using some weird implements, some marker or something.
Yeah, dry brush techniques and stuff. Doing a little bit of the lettering himself in the art. These are pretty interesting pages with this grid and large page panel count. Man, starting to let loose. You see the ruled borders falling away. Total cartoon being introduced now to something that's... That one's not photo reference, but in the same book where you're seeing like a photo reference figure next to cartoon iconography.
And we had the conversation with him at Heroes Con. You know, follow the video to the end screen, you're gonna be able to click our shoot interview. And I asked him about the influence of animation. This is some of the stuff that I had in mind, because it's like, it's too on the nose, it's too close, it's too perfect. Also, using some weird, maybe like a wax crayon thing, like with the black right here. And this is a dicey proposition, because you don't know how that's going to print. You have no clue.
Yeah, for sure.
You have to have courage. You have to have some balls, man.
I think guys had to be more open to that, because I've seen it in some of the manga stuff that we looked at, like Lone Wolf and Cub. The originals to the printed is so different. I think you just have to sort of accept it.
You and I, like, we exist in a world where we publish like a book a year. These motherfuckers are publishing a book a month, and Lone Wolf and Cub are publishing a book a week. You could have an off week. You could try something one
week. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
You could try something this month. He could see how it looks and amend his process otherwise.
So I want to point out some of these little bits, like these stars, the circles. To me, this is real cartoon shorthand. This is something you would see in, this is a not the best comparison, but in Popeye. Like, I always think of all the stars that fly off of Popeye and E.C. Seeger, and it's very animated and dynamic. And, I mean, it's... That's an odd thing to see in a Marvel comic. You don't see that kind of language used very often.
Lovecraftian bit. Got to call attention to that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And the fact that these guys have to, like, not only draw a comic every month, but now you have to generate, like, a Lovecraftian citadel. Go ahead.
Yeah, for one panel, by the way.
All right.
Look at this panel. I just love this. Totally in love with this panel. You know, projecting out of her mind and then into this other figure.
Yeah, you could blow that up, man, put that on a wall.
This kind of stuff is the mark of an experienced, confident artist, because I would never believe that translates into, like, flowers and grass and foliage, but it does perfectly, and it scratches, you know, especially at this size, you can see it. Like, it's just scratched out in the comic, looks perfect. This kind of stuff, too. You know, this is just one brush stroke. No thought given to it at all, and it's just perfect smoke. There's a lot of interesting visual effects, too, like this kind of transition. You just take it for granted. You know, he's so good in so many facets, like, that's an afterthought, but you still have to figure it out. Like, how do these figures transition from this other world back?
I always like seeing stats.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when... you could eyeball something like this. It's no big deal. It's a character inside of a void. But if you wanted to be accurate, like, that's where the reduction wheel comes in. You gotta, like, learn that piece of voodoo. Oh, I'm so glad they have these two-page spreads, man. This is like a Hugo Pratt amount of like brushwork and pen and ink work of the all of these background textures.
This is very, very different than what we had been seeing too. Like some of these marks, I'm not sure what those are coming out of. They could be brush, they could be marker. But it feels like an experiment of like, how do we do, you know, what can I draw with? How can I represent these different textures? And also the costumes look so great with the highlights in yellow. So they bleed in and out of the negative space with the dark parts. Visually very, very fun. This is your blow up from the beginning of the book.
Yeah, and you could see, like, you buy a separate piece of paper for the Craft Tint Duotone. And when we cover, like, the Frank Miller Artifact Edition and stuff, you'll see this, where they cut out the section that they need. And you could tell, like, he was, like, the opposite of liberal with it because that paper's so expensive. And, well, now it's gone, but, you know, you just cut out what you need and then paste it on there. And then this... this whiteout is to try to mitigate some of this harsh line from, because it's a thick board. So you want to try to basically create a smooth kind of slope so that when it's printed, you don't get this showing up.
Tom Morzakowski lettering. Absolutely love it. Love it. I would frame that lettering and put on the wall.
Oh, I know, man. He's so good.
This is neat to me because it's so abstract. I would never believe this would work. If I were trying to draw a cityscape, you know, at sunset or whatever, at dusk, I would never think this is good. This will read. It's so abstract. These are just black rectangles. And again, shrink it down and put your night sky color on it, and it's perfect.
Jim, I'm transitioning into a phase of drawing more speedy and giving myself like very, very rigid deadlines with some hope that I make some discovery like this in a way, man, where it's like for shorthand, you do some things and then it's going to work sometimes. I'm in a bleeding edge phase where there might be a little bit more wrong than is right, but I think I'm going to figure it out over time. Just let me do a couple hundred pages.
I wonder, like, with this stuff, how fast he's working. Because Sienkiewicz has inked a lot of stuff, and I do think he works fast, and it gives it a certain life.
Yeah.
And I wonder with this stuff, like, where he was at. Like, does he end up spending a bunch of time on layouts and compositions, and then you go in and ink very quick, and that gives you an energy and life? You know, I'm just curious about that. I love this a lot, and I was looking at this in anticipation, and it reminds me of, like, old, like, World War One and Two comics with like dog fighting, because there were a lot of like Alex Toth. I've seen these kind of things where a guy's walking out the plane,
yeah,
and he's under a wing and it's all silhouette.
No Caniff.
No Sickles. It's kind of there's a history of this kind of shot, and it's amazing to see it with like this high tech jet and New Mutants.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things, man, where it's like, now I gotta draw a fucking jet. Like, let me. That's the thing I like about
it. It looks amazing though, man. No, what a good shot of that.
Yeah, it's great. But, you know, it's a very simple view.
Yeah, for sure.
And I appreciate that with the cartoonists you described. You know, Toth, like, they figure out, like, a beautiful composition that's also not, you're not killing yourself with perspective and lines and stuff.
I think it's breathtaking. Like, those silhouettes are, there's a level of detail in those silhouettes that wouldn't have to be there. And I'm thankful it is there. It really looks nice as a drawing. I'm not sure about why there's so much difference in page coloration. And I wonder if it has to do with storage.
Yeah.
You know, if some of these were sold to collectors that really took care of them and kept them out of the light. And it could be variations in paper, too. Certainly that's something that is a real thing. That's pretty radical drawing.
Yeah, where do you begin? You know, like when he's planning that out, like how does that start?
That one's really wild, and if you look closely, like, that's another one that's just a bizarre, strange drawing. There you go, Legion. And also repeating this image.
Repeating the image, he found a use for that brick Zipitone that I have sitting in my box over there. I wonder how that printed.
Yeah, I thought about bringing issues, because there are so many pages in this book.
I have them over
that,
there.
That whenever I see it, that was my question, is like, how did this print?
And you can see this whole page is a piece of duotone, because he wanted to do this, you know, this what do you call it, like a flashback mm-hmm. sequence or whatever. So he chose not to use the blue line paper.
Really nice, cool layout there.
Pretty interesting. Also cool that Orzechowski lettered on top of this, so he wasn't intimidated by the paper stock difference, because it is a different paper.
Yeah, for sure. And I think if you look close, there's a little more bleeding in the lettering on that paper.
Yeah, for sure.
I like this, the gap between a row of panels. I tend not to do that, but I do think about it now and then. And sometimes people will have a wider gap, like vertically. So like this would be a wider gap, this would be a wider gap. And then the horizontal, it's less wide because you're reading. I think it's because you're supposed to keep your eye going in this direction. And so the gap is smaller. I assume that's why. But I do think you can do time and things and manipulate different time by playing with that composition and not taking those gutters for granted as like one size fits all.
Agreed. Manga will play around with a lot of the gutter stuff.
I like the brick texture too a lot. Some drawn, some with the duo shade, some in black. Nothing to it, but, you know, it means a lot. It gives you that organic lived-in world kind of feeling. More of this, the duo shade paper.
Yeah, super fun, man. Really hard to lay that chemical down in a fluid kind of way. It, like, you know, just like a like in like a perfect wash. It was just such a corrosive, dirty, gross chemical that the second you put brush to paper, it just starts developing immediately, and it's hard to move around, and you can't add water.
Looks like this is marker. A couple of these lines, at least.
And oh, even that whole magneto, because it's very, it's like the Toth flare pen.
Yeah, you can see the color is going out, you know, it's going purple at this point. I'm sure non-archival, that was always a big knock on markers, and so you see that in those images.
Yeah, but for our purposes, like, you know, the comic is the thing, so it only needs to hold up long enough to get scanned.
Oh, for sure. This panel is one that I will probably look at tonight in the printed form to compare and contrast. Boy, what a panel. What an amazing panel that is.
Yeah, and that's one of those ones that I would feel like I'm not doing enough work on or something.
But it's so great, like, you know, you have all these different layers of what's happening. You know, if I were drawing this, it'd be several panels.
Right.
Great panel variations and open panels. That's a relatively new concept for me, is that idea of open panels.
Yeah, I'm playing with that a lot myself. And also, I'm playing with, like, I've used the grid for about 1,000 pages, my last 1,000 pages. So now, I'm working, like, there are no panels the same size on the page.
The grid giveth and the grid taketh away, right?
See what you could do, man.
Yeah, I've had some fun going back and forth with those. Great silhouettes. Sunspot. I always liked Sunspot's design.
Yeah, man. He's
negative space.
Right. He's the other version of Zero. If you want to go simpler.
That's true. Paste up lettering. It's a real approach of like building these. I always found that character a fun design. Reminds me of Strong Guy.
Yeah, totally. And Strong Guy is invented in the pages of New Mutants here, so.
Look at that. That's your close-up from the end pages. So, you know, about that size blown up.
Right. Man, he's really getting into his thing.
So a nice piece of this artist edition is there's so much color work in it.
As it should be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was thinking you could do an entire issue that would just be his covers. I was also wondering, is he the best cover artist in comics, American comics history? You start assembling them like the Real War Stories cover.
Oh, yeah.
Like, man, he's done some really good covers, and there's a wide variety of them. All right.
We're segueing into Moon Knight.
Going back through time.
I have that run.
Yeah, it's an interesting run. He's on there. He probably does 30 plus, about 30 issues, I'd say.
Yeah.
And you really see him go from Neil Adams to Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yeah. It's mostly on the covers, man. Like
he's... Couple of the late issues, yeah. He starts to get pretty inventive. But yeah, there's some good work. And I mean, look, whenever he's doing a very Neil Adams-inspired style, it's still good work.
Oh, definitely. I had a Fantastic Four comic that he did way back in the day, man. And that was like, you know, never even thought that I would be able to pronounce his name. So I, in my mind, would call him Bill S. with a long last name.
You wonder if Moon Knight's even a character, if some other artist was connected to him in the beginning.
Right.
You know, it's such a strong artist out of the gate for years. It really gives Moon Knight a certain momentum that if you don't have some interesting artist on there, I don't know.
This is ballsy.
Yeah.
Use this zip, you know?
And whatever this is. Is like that pencil, grease pencil, charcoal, some texture.
Grease pencil. That's what I was thinking about, man. And also this is like he cuts Frisket and he masks it off and then does his splatter. Yeah. That's not a zip.
Yeah, that's going for it for sure.
Because you could see where he has to cut, like you see the razor, like the X-Acto lines.
I was looking at this panel and thinking like, you know, that's a pretty interesting choice. Because you have your ground plane. It's not like this is empty.
Right.
It's just extreme foreground.
Yeah, snow.
That's another composition that's I don't have the nerve to do that, but it's so good. And it may be partially photocopied for use on this side.
Nice.
Because you do see him doing paste-ups and things. And obviously, you know, Frisket, splatter, all these different effects, screen tones. He's clearly working on this almost like it's a canvas. Here we go, right? Starting to get into, like, Bill Sienkiewicz. This was a great issue. This notebook motif carries through it. The instruments, the sports, like, this is just
magnificent. And this is the one
magnificent.
That this is when, like, the first time he, like, plotted something out. So, like, you know, once again, in our conversation with him, like, this is an issue that comes up. And super thankful that it's here.
And a good demonstration. We're talking about him using these different approaches and different pieces. You see splatter effects and screen tone on this page, so this is magnificent.
Unbelievable. So it's Frisket and masking for this layer, this dark layer, and then you take that off, and then you continue to do more. Now you just added depth, because this is the stuff that's behind the building. This shit is like in front.
For sure. And see touch-ups with white to further accentuate that, or to mask out the stuff that's behind it that may have had some of that splatter.
Now, Jimmy, you're older than me, man. I wonder if you ever visited Pittsburgh when the air was this quality, because this is what I used to hear it was like here in town.
You know what's funny is you always see those pictures, too, like in historic places where it's like, this is Pittsburgh 1950 downtown, and it's worse than this. I love all this brick line work, too. This is amazing to me because it's hard for me to do buildings and cityscapes and stuff, and I'm constantly trying to find ways to make them interesting and have character. And to me, it's like stunning. It's just stunning. Even the wires I find beautiful. They're so nice because they're line drawn. You know, it's a line.
Yeah.
Like you can just admire them as a line, but it actually is wires in this case.
He's not like gritting stuff out with T-squares and triangles. Like this building has a tilt, and it should have a tilt. It feels right.
Yeah, that's a dynamic quality to it for sure. I love this though. I think this is spectacular. 1982 signature.
I'm sure these are famous musicians, Steven Tyler or something.
What a contrast too, to go from this where he's like drawing in black ink and everything to just this very open layout.
Yeah. You know,
same issue, by the way.
He had something going on here.
Yeah, and there may be stuff in the finished piece. You know, like this could be a piece of art that's not quite done, but definitely going for it. So issue 26, go track that one down maybe if you're watching this and enjoying it. Yeah, it feels like a corner has been turned where like now he's using scratching effects, very abstract marks to design, to you know, suggest either motion, texture, values. It's just really a level up, I think. Man, it's just beautiful. That's amazing.
And even stuff like having this black cone-headed guy, like with a black background, it's like you wouldn't think to do that, but he does it. And it works.
Yeah. I always admire when people are able to do like a reflection, like a white wet reflection.
So good, man. Those old time comic illustrators could do that, you know. Lee Elias, one of the best dudes at it.
Boy, he's a great guy with the brush. I used to look at his original art on eBay.
Who's that, Lee Elias? Lee Elias. Oh, yeah. Is this Frank Miller? Are they pencils? Or is that all Sienkiewicz?
That is a good question.
That feels like Miller to me.
Totally looks like Miller. There should be an FM somewhere, right? I don't see signatures, but I think you're right. That has to be Frank Miller pencils. It might say that in the beginning of the book, too.
Yeah.
I was looking at this, and I wasn't sure what this is, if it might be from the Incredible Hulk magazine.
They started doing weird stuff even in the comics.
Says, yeah, I guess it says Moon Knight 18 there. I was thinking, because I know that there were black and white Moon Knights that Sienkiewicz did in one of those magazines. I think it was the Hulk magazine.
Whenever Moon Knight became... I don't know if it was always direct market, or if it, like, at a later stage it became direct market. That's really when he started, like, fucking around. And probably because they were like, we're about to cancel this, man. And this is like, these are those kind of covers, man, where he would like be spattering with the white.
Yeah, no outline around the white cape.
And he would use that motif a lot, and yeah. It was very, very cool.
Starting to get into his painting.
You know, I confess to seeing the first versions of that in Wizard Magazine thumbnails, man. And I'm like, I got to get that comic, yeah. Man.
Very dramatic cover. So good on the covers. This is so Neil Adamsy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, with that big foreground character. Like, you know this what, man? View.
I bet you this is that... That's the Hulk, right? That's got to be what this is from. I think. 1987. And now, what we've all been waiting for. Yeah. Elektra Assassin. So this book reprints Elektra Assassin issue 1. It's in its entirety. So we're going to go through about 30 pages of this and talk about, like, this is the showcase of, like, every technique that he knows. We're going to see it here. Look at how great the helicopter of the, you know, the palm tree, helicopter like a palm tree. And again, I say, like, what was in Miller's script whenever this shows up?
Right.
Because Miller, in those interviews, talks about when he got this art back, he just rewrote the book.
You know something crazy? I've been meaning to talk to you, and we could have the conversation on the video. Looking through the old comics journals, he was mentioning and talking about, you know, the Elektra miniseries. And it was for Epic. So, like, Elektra is a Marvel character. He and Frank Miller own Garrett. And you did a Garrett comic. That Marvel published, and I bet you there's not a copyright Frank Miller, Bill Sienkiewicz on the Garrett portion of that. So I'm saying Frank Miller and Bill, they might be able to get Marvel for some loot.
I think they get Marvel for some loot regularly. I feel like they're earning royalties from them right now.
It is funny, though, that's an oversight. Like, if they would have known that before then, yeah. You would have had to draw
Punisher strikes or some on shit. The you can draw anything you want. I wanted to point out, like, the lettering on here.
Yes.
This stuff is so influential to me. Like this really feels like you're just throwing out the rule book. You know, like, he's lettering on the art, but then it's even bleeding off the art. It's not very legible. I don't know what that's... Is that ballpoint pen that he's lettering with? And then, speaking of tools, you know, color pencils or crayons, it is wild. Like, this is just no holds barred. The story that I would always hear is they didn't know how to pay for painted art at the time. Like, that wasn't set up. And so he got paid for coloring.
He's not a jobber. Because anybody, like, a jobber would be like, well, okay, it's not cost effective for me to do this, man. I could color 10 pages of fucking Power Pack comics in the time that it takes me to do one page of this. So, you know, he gave a fuck. Pasting up little doilies and
shit. Yeah, lace and patterns. What a contrast between these two sets of styles. And even that is not enough. He's taking a 9-panel grid, and even that, he's twisting a panel to, like, further create whatever mood and effect he wants to have here.
Yeah. And you would see this technique, this old illustrative technique, Collier's Magazine, mm-hmm. Man, old paperback book covers. I think I read a copy of Catcher in the Rye that had this kind of design motif. And like, I'm sure that's, like, a style.
He's definitely referencing all kinds of, like, illustration, you know, background, history of illustration kind of stuff, for sure. boy, and I can't imagine what he's thinking about with this kind of stuff. It reminds me so much of like Holocaust images or something. Mm. Just really dark, depressing. I mean, the color palette, it's tough. I was looking at this for a while too and trying to figure it out.
Is it cut paper?
That's my guess, right? Because there's like a cast of, there's a shadow being cast, so there's some dimensionality to it. And I think that's what it is. I think it's cut paper.
It definitely is, man, because what we're seeing here is the boogers from paper cement, like rubber cement on the side. There's an eraser that you, a paper cement eraser that you put the stuff down and then you could, you know, run it over and get the snots off. But you will almost always have like the little, this knot like on the edges. And that's kind of like what we're looking at there. It's, there's one color paper, but then he chooses to have the hands and feet be that same color, maybe knowing that there will be a little bit of a black.
Yeah,
I wonder... Because that's paper. That's not something missing.
Mm.
That's definitely not something missing. Good pose. Amanda Connor was a Kubert School student around this time. And the legend is that she posed for many of the shots as a, for the Elektra character.
Yeah, that is a good pose. That feels like very believable weight.
Yeah, good drapery on the gear.
This is more of that illustration style, Ed, that you were pointing out.
Yeah,
it is just, man, I would read this comic when I first got it. I got it early on, and I would read it and just. Just puzzled.
Yeah, it was
try to decode, like, why are you doing this?
This was Advanced Comics, man. I got this pretty late, and I think I read the story once, so I would like to give it a reread.
Well, I'd love to do a reread on this.
Talk about it on the channel for sure.
Yeah, I've read it a couple of times. You know, as I've gotten older, I've read it, and it's I get it. You know, like I understand more of what's happening because there's like multiple tracks of like different characters' internal monologues going on. Yeah, it really bent my head around when I was a kid trying to figure it out. And what a contrast style-wise, once again.
Yeah, it's like flashback. He's creating his own language. Like, flashback is this. These colors are for this sequence. Whenever the schizophrenic weirdo guy is doing something, that's another set of colors, another kind of panel.
Yeah, there's...
You know, these are uniform panels. The schizophrenic guy has wild-looking...
Huge use of art for reality, like breaking of reality.
This is Lecture Lives Again. My bad. Like I was thinking of the Love and War.
Gotcha. Right. But I mean, it's a similar thing. Like she's going through stuff. This is a mental asylum, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you see this like reality fragmenting in different ways, and you know the book deals with that. Like she's seeing visions of stuff. There are demons running around. It is definitely different versions of what we're experiencing and represented through this art. And then look, he does like a panel like that. And then he does like the homage to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We talked about the cartoony stuff that we saw in New Mutants. Whenever like cartoon characters show up, here's the dark twisted side of that, right? Like it's still cartoonish, but now it's the sinister, scary, dark version of that, a nightmare version of the cartoons.
Then he puts on that artist tape, man, to give himself good gutters.
Yeah, and sometimes works over it.
Yeah.
That's neat, too, to think of him working in layers. You know, the artist tape probably goes on as a way to clean up whatever the base coat of paint is.
Right.
But then, as he's going, it's like, well, I want a jagged panel or whatever on top of that. I always loved this panel. Like, that's when I definitely kind of committed to memory as a kid. Think about what you can get out of eyeballs.
Can't imagine what it was like reading this as a shorty, man.
Very iconic. And then this.
Yeah, like a little like Fritz.
Let me tape up this
little Cheshire drawing.
Cut out lips.
That's what that is, too, man, because that's like the Cheshire Cat from, like, the drawn... through the looking glass, man, but and then the lips from the Cheshire Cat.
It is just so odd seeing these kinds of shifts in style on the same pages.
It's really stretching out Miller's writing chops.
Oh yeah,
because it's like now what do you do? Him. Now how do you make this work?
And that, you know, showing sort of that range of going from very cartoonish to, You know, it could be advertising art or something. Still life, color studies.
And I bet he drew. He did this stuff fast. I bet it wasn't. Didn't take forever. Like he, you know, has his tricks down and made it work, man.
I was reading. I think it's the comics interview. The David Kraft. That's Comics Interview?
Yeah.
I have one of those, and it's from this time period, and he's talking about doing the Daredevil painted graphic novel, which I think he started before Elektra.
I think so,
Assassin, too. And finished afterwards, maybe?
Oh, I don't know if that's true, but
he definitely started that one first. And he said he would just, like, walk around New York and kind of think about, you know, what he was doing and look at stuff. And then he'd show up in the studio after these long walks, just, like, ready to attack the page.
This is fun. Looks like airbrush.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty unusual piece. Like, we haven't seen anything that quite looks like that up to this point. I don't even know what that is. Some watercolor stuff, like...
And he's going for a hazy out of focus.
Yeah, very, very effective.
And it's like, you can imagine, like, oh, I need something to be hazy. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to probably have to hit the blur tool.
Right, yeah.
This is on the motherfucking page, man.
So simple. You know, he does this a bunch where it's just super simple and it reads, but it is less than a cartoon even.
Yeah, it's full language. You're just reading that.
This is gorgeous too, like using that watercolor texture as your background, as your gradient background. It reads beautiful on the page.
And this is like blue lined fucking paper. Like, you know, like what... What happened to this paper? How do they stretch it out so that it could be photographed or whatever, man? Because it had to warp this stuff.
Very true. I wonder if he was working on his own paper or something, because I don't see any, like...
There's this
shit. There's a blue line, but I don't know. Oh, yeah.
There's this stuff.
Yeah, you're right about that.
But you know what I think? What you could do is you could spray it here, several boards on top of one another, to just, like, create a very sturdy...
Check this out. This is a panel, right? Like, all done up. And then cut apart. And then, like, staples. You know, those are staples that are sort of holding the pieces of that panel together.
Wow.
Who thinks of that? Yeah. I don't think that was in the script.
Right.
All right, Bill. Paint this panel, then cut it up, and then staple it down on the page. Like, you're barely holding it together.
I'm glad you asked that Raw Magazine question, because there's that one cover that was all torn up and stuff.
Yeah.
And then also, like, you know, he's William S. Burroughs. Like, you know, it's like, oh, well, this is comic book cut-ups.
It's such a crazy, bold idea, though. Like, nothing I can think of in other comics that would be like, oh, he's probably looking at this guy.
Right.
This is fun to me. You know, all the white space, and then it's like, this is what's drawn and painted, but it looks great. Really inventive graphic.
Yeah, ninjas, man.
Gotta love the ninjas and lions petting a lion. Cartoonist and cats, right? These dudes are so 80s.
I know.
I love Garrett, man. What a great character.
Yeah, real Bronson kind of character, man. And then this,
super top heavy.
And this is like
great hair.
Whenever
great mustache.
Whenever Bill or Ted was in that one Death Wish movie. I forget which dude is which. The one who isn't Keanu.
Alex Cox, right?
Alex Winter.
Alex Winter, yes.
Shouts to Alex Cox, CBLDF. I think he actually works for IDW now.
This is one of those images that I just loved. And it's like a sewing machine or something.
Totally, totally. It's cyberpunk. I mean, it's steampunk.
These lines remind me a lot of like a Ralph Steadman. Very lively lines.
Yeah, and then get that little spatter here and there to increase the Steadman energy. That really is like a old school stapler. I mean, a sewing machine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre. Another anytime I see this, I think of like the Kirby Tech, where it's just the weirdest assemblage of shapes and forms and things. And this might be the weirdest of them. And so, you know, some random pages from the rest of Elektra Assassin. Like, what are these things supposed to be? They're hooded little blue skin, like they're Smurfs, but with hoods on.
Take them off, and then they're the Kewpie dolls from Dark Knight Returns. Like,
really, really twisted.
Miller would do that stuff, man.
I'm convinced that this is your Sin City bed from the first Sin City.
100. And Miller was not designy in that kind of way, like, before Sienkiewicz was added to the mixture, man.
I bet you this stuff was just really changed Miller's headspace. It was, you know, like, getting this back and thinking, like, what words do I put on this?
Yeah.
And it's magnificent. It's probably my favorite, currently, probably my favorite Miller work. But it had to be, like, a lot of new ideas come out of this. You know, probably one of the great examples of collaborations where it's like, I'm going to bring some stuff and you bring your A game and we'll see what we can put together.
Is this the first drawing of the Shield logo that gets restated time and time again? Ah, that's what we need, man. Is there a Ken Wynn page on this motherfucker?
I don't know if there is. Oh, there you go. look at that drawing. That's almost like an animation cell.
Strathmore 500 with the little stamp. Yeah. So he's even playing with different papers.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Know your tools, know your media.
Yeah, like he's seven issues in at this point. Yeah, I can see that. I don't know what is what. You know, like, is this an original drawing?
Right.
Is that something that's picked up and put there? The lettering. I mean, look at the lettering. He is just there at this point. Like, he must be in the zone. You know, like, they've done enough issues. Who knows? Maybe some have come out, you know, and gotten the no response, and it's just like, let's just go for it. But it's incredible. Like, these are just incredible to me. Absolutely beautiful against that, like, olive drab green, the red just coming off
pops,
the page.
Pops, man. Pops.
That's what amazes me going through Elektra Assassin, is graphically just everything's in there.
Jimmy, dude, like, since we started this channel, like,
just think you'd see this color?
My I've been introducing new stuff to my work and, like, new ideas and things. It's like, man, I need to play around with some color.
Oh, colors, it has changed my life. And I feel like I haven't even scratched the surface.
And I'm talking practical. Like, I'm talking, like, get dirty, you know, lay down the little tarp and fucking play around. Like, see what happens.
Yeah, that blue just glows.
And even this is, like, some kind of rag paper. You could see real close, and it has, like, a very specific tooth that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, and you can see if this were taped off, and it probably was, but yeah, the tape has been removed here.
Yeah.
See, like, this, I think, is a photocopy blow-up of this. And you can see kind of an edge around there, but I'm pretty sure that's the exact same drawing, but I assume this is the blow-up, because you can see bleeding and stuff on there.
Right.
And then the iconic Elektra Assassin. This is Mobius's Elektra Assassin, I think, is... You can add this to your swipe file.
Right.
Because I think that comes out 2-3 years later.
That's the iconic. That's the iconic right there, boy.
Before I got the poster of this, I had considered, like, blowing this up and just doing a bootleg print of it. See, this feels almost like it's a print, like it's a scan of the finished art. You know, it's so flawless how all of that is fit together.
How did he do that fucking LCD?
It has to be pasted up, right?
You see nuance?
This is the kind of thing, like, you can do that in ink or whatever with, you know, like, put your highlighter color behind it and then ink it, and it's very believable, especially if you roll it out. So it's possible that's painted.
Yeah, you see nuance in it. It's not a flat color. Unless he kayfabed it afterwards. I see a little splatter. Mm-hmm. That's wild shit, because it's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, there's...
That's that thing, though. Like, certain stuff lends itself to the illusion. And that's the kind of thing, like, you can do it. They're just dashes. So, you know, if you have it ruled out so that they are mostly straight and in line, it is a kayfabe one. You know, like, it's one that's very believable. Get that nice bright paint.
It's amazing, man.
By the way, that team is awesome.
Yeah, it's like a G.I. Joe kind of gimmick.
Yes, that's Team 7 in my dreams. Love that signature, too.
Yeah.
This is another one of those great watercolor. A lot of organic stuff going on that page.
Yeah, this is where you could tell, man, David Mack is, like, taking notes.
1999, by the way. That's him coming back to the character. This is a cover on, I think this is the Amazing Heroes cover.
Mm.
I think. Man, he did the rounds of all those. You know, like, there's a Comics Journal Elektra cover, the Comics Interview, and Amazing Heroes. I think this is Amazing Heroes.
And by the way, I was so glad to hear that he posed somebody out for certain things, man, right. Because of, like, that's hard to do, come up with. Like,
yeah, the light on the jawline.
Yeah. That's real hard. You can't come up with that on your own.
I absolutely love this drawing, though, because it's that negative space where the hair makes up the line.
Yeah, he's so good for that.
This is pretty fun. 2003. And then I think this is the last piece of... there might be some covers after this, but this is the Daredevil Love and War.
Oh, great. Great. So a
couple pages from that.
I really enjoy this.
I do, too. Very tight, the art in this, compared to, like, the Elektra stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, he had to get Marvel comfortable with the idea first, man. And then you go crazy. Make a hit, and they can't say nothing.
I love seeing, like, all this stuff. Where I assume that's him testing colors and stuff. Right. I see that in a lot of times, like an original art on the edges where you're testing your brush or your pen nib. And if it's in color, it's really nice. And this is like pure painted. You know, we were seeing a lot of mixed media in Elektra. Of course, as soon as I say that, sure. We see the mixed media. And I don't know if you remember the printed page of this, but I love it. It's some of my favorite lettering. The letterer, it's a bunch of these like very short, you know, like one word per caption, but that makes up a sentence, and they bend them so that it's like they're following Daredevil in this motion down the page.
Dope.
Really cool expressive lettering. There's some great lettering in Elektra Assassin too. Like if we do a reread on that, where you see these, you know, like they're having machine gun battles, and then you're seeing like their narrative boxes that are broken up into like one word at a time. I don't know whose decision it is, but it has this effect of like the lettering mirroring the action.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
Yeah, I if I had to guess, I think that's a Miller stroke.
It feels like Miller because he's really smart with that. He does some of that stuff in Sin City where it's like the lettering really enhances the storytelling. This is the blow up from the beginning, the two-page spread, so you can get a sense of that size.
So is this the original?
I think so.
And
this one's a different color, so I think that's probably the original.
So then the question is, what is this? Like, who would trust... In 1995, I wouldn't trust a color Xerox. And you can see that it looks so different, but this is still better than any Xerox. So it's like, what was the quick and dirty print technology that could make this happen in a speedy fashion? You know, print shops exist everywhere, so you could go get something.
Yeah, and he's in New York.
Right.
So I'm guessing there's color... Like, it's got to be color photocopy, right? Because it's not like you were scanning it, you know, in say, 85, 86.
It has to be color photocopy. I don't think it's a photocopy. But I mean, I don't think it's a... I mean, it's clearly not a scan. But is there something else? Is there something more expensive? Is there, like, a... You know, a $30 kind of print or something.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
Is it G. Clay or something?
Yeah. I don't know. I do feel like those guys, like the photocopy machine was a tool, like when it shows up, that people were eager to like experiment and use. And so I'm guessing that's what it is.
Maybe it's photographs.
That would be possible. You know, certainly like if you do any paintings, you were photographing them at the time. Like I even had to photograph paintings in college. And, you know, you would light it, you would have different speed films or slides. So that's a real thing. And being, you know, part of the art world at all, it would be a part of the processes that were available. So that's possible.
Just a color Xerox in the 1980s, man. Like, it had to be shittier than the ones in the 90s.
I don't know about that. They're trade-offs. You know, some of the digitization of photocopies today... isn't always a positive move, but I think the printing, I think the ink is probably better today, at least for a variety of colors and vibrant colors. And then we get a little cover gallery going on here.
It's fun. You know, because it's a little wonky, a little stiff. By the books, by the numbers. Clearly a smart guy, knows how to draw, and then he goes into that abstract place. I mean, he could...
Do you know what this is from?
Probably Dazzler.
Oh, it's it's got to be Punisher.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see the skull there at first. That's weird, like the Punisher Surf Special. Yeah, these are really great.
Paul Chadwick might have drawn this issue.
It's possible. I love his Dazzler covers. This is one of the coolest covers. It's so neat. So much graphic stuff going on, you know, like with the color fields and shapes. It does feel random, though, like what covers they picked. You think of all the covers he's drawn, some ad art.
Iconic.
I like the other piece.
I know, man.
Give them both to me.
Who owns the Iron Fist, yeah.
I'm not sure what this is from. It may have been a cover to some, you know, 90s or 2000s issue or something.
It's cool, man. Notes, 234%, so he still has his reduction wheel.
Probably.
Trading card.
Well, 34%. Maybe if you're cropping it, 34 would give you something about that size. Again, unless it's cropped somehow.
Right.
That does feel like a trading card, though, right?
Sure, yeah.
Some kind of small print. And then just some info on Bill Sienkiewicz, the artist. And close with these end pages. This is about an eighth or a tenth of the page. You know, it's like a 10-panel grid, what they're pulling this from.
It's incredible, man.
I love this line. Like, I look at this line and I think, you can make a line like that. Because right. That's beautiful. You know, like, it's sort of accidental that we're seeing it at, geez, 10 times, say, the original size. But I look at it and go, that's a very lively line.
Mm-hmm.
Put that in your arsenal.
That comes from Japan, man. That's the Hokusai manga line.
Yeah.
You know, with it, those, like, you know, using perhaps maybe like a real quill feather to get that line. I'm not saying he was. Hokusai.
I also, I don't know if it's just getting, you know, the more comics you make, you look at different stuff, or if it's seeing artist editions at different sizes. But I look at these panels and I think, like, panel is single composition, even though it's on a page.
Yeah.
Like, make it work on the page. But also make it work as its own panel unit.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of the phone. You know, as we're recording this, I'm looking at a monitor of it, and it's much, much smaller, and it's like, wow, that's a great-looking image at, you know, a couple inches by a couple inches, but a great-looking image here, too. And it's almost like the everything kind of has to read on a phone screen.
Sure.
At this point.
Yeah.
And so, like, you get to see this at, like, many, many phone screen size, and it looks amazing, but guess what? That also works small.
Yeah.
So it's that near small, near far, big small.
A lot of lessons to learn, man. And you know, like with the YouTube channel, when I do the streams, I look at the screen and I am looking at the page that I'm working on, and then I will white things out. Like, oh, it just looks more clear.
Yes.
If I do it this way, Ben. But heck of an artist edition volume. Shouts to IDW for compiling this bastard.
I love that they put these out. You know, they're such a joy, and there is a lot in this one to take apart and learn and study and think about.
Yeah, man. Thanks for bringing this haul over, dude. And Kayfabers, couple things. Give some suggestions. What artist editions do you think are fly? We got a bunch of them. We have thoughts of our own, man.
And I'm not afraid to use your suggestions to add another one or two to my collection.
It's an expensive item. We're running a business here, Jimmy. The more important matter at hand is to make sure that you like, subscribe, and follow the YouTube channel, to hit the bell icon so that we can notify you when the next videos are available. And we are on the race to 15,000 subscribers. So hit that button immediately.
Be sure to subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter. There's a link below this video to that, and probably the best way to stay up to date on everything that we're doing and make sure you don't miss anything. And you can find Cartoonist Kayfabe merchandise and t-shirts at links below this video.
Jimmy, man, we gotta go dust off this Holbein watercolor art set I have over yonder, man. Give these dudes their marching orders, man.
Make more comics.